You ever get that feeling, the walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box. Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today.
I'm KC.
And I'm Tyler.
And you're listening to
The Element Podcast.
What's happening, all my woods people? Guess what? We got cameras. The Element Podcast is on YouTube. Hallelujah! That's what the people have been wanting. That's what we're giving to them because it is Whitetail Week. So one of our big things for Whitetail Week right now at Meat Eater is we're putting an episode of the Element Podcast on YouTube. So thank y'all for watching. If you are there, go check out the Meat Eater website, the First Light stuff, all that. There's some great deals on stuff. And also, we got a lot of fun stuff going on over there. Our friend Tyler Jones is in a head-to-head with the most popular, newest, greatest Wildcat cartridge to ever exist, the 6.5 Creedmoor versus the traditional 243, which, Tyler, I got to hand it to you. Outside of the 30-30, the 243 is the greatest whitetail caliber ever picked.
Is it?
Yeah.
I think Greg would agree with you there, man.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, but I would not, you know. I wouldn't. The 243, right, man, I love shooting my 243. I've killed a lot of deer with it. In fact, I've probably only killed one, maybe two deer with another cartridge. And so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Nice.
It's a hammer.
It is, man, and it doesn't have much recoil at all, which makes whitetail hunting should not involve heavy recoil.
No, dude. I'm just shooting them with tiny little arrows, not even adult arrows, just and killing them and getting a full
juvenile
penetration.
Arrows. Yeah,
juvenile arrows just going all the way through.
That's
somehow,
it, man.
And,
you know, when I was 9 years old, my family bought me a 7 mag to hunt whitetails with.
And then your shoulder disappeared.
That's right. That's right, man. So I appreciate the 243. I also appreciate what we got going on today because...
Oh, I need votes, by the way.
Yeah.
I need y'all to go vote on that for me, not for Garrett, the 6.5 guy.
Yeah, vote for the 243 because that's what makes sense. Y'all all submitted a bunch of questions for us to answer. We like doing Q&As. In fact, it's way more fun. That way we can just boom, 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 and just spit out some stuff that we like to talk about as opposed to trying to sit around and talk about something boring like buck bedding or something. So... We're going to do that Q&A here in just a second. We have a ton of questions that our boy Eric, he's here. He's going to read us some questions. Eric.
What's up?
We need to talk about the great state of Nebraska.
Mm. Let's do that.
When is jackalope season?
I haven't checked yet, but
okay.
It started up here.
Did it?
Yeah.
Okay.
But not in Nebraska
Is it
yet.
The migration? They kind of time it up.
It's a migratory thing. Okay. It's kind of like they start, you know, Canada goose season in Canada earlier than.
Well, we just got done with some hunting in Nebraska. Jackalope season wasn't over. So our loyal compadre, Eric, decided that he needed to just lay the hammer down on some whitetails while we were there.
Well, I told Tyler that night in the tree, I was like, man, I really need to stock up on some meat this winter. And that's what happened that night.
He did some.
We saw what happens.
Slock up on some meat.
He did, dude.
That boy was slocking, dude.
Tell us what happened, man.
Well, Tyler Jones and I got in a tree together, and we were having a dough party.
Special things happen in a tree, dude.
And in about a matter of 2 minutes, I bet, I doubled my lifetime deer.
Dadgummit, dude.
Wow.
Yeah. And guess what? You smoked them.
Felt good.
Smoked them both.
Watched both of them fall.
Yep.
How about that? And one of them fell on the road.
Yeah.
Which, y'all didn't hunt in the road, but you're near
I'd call it a public land deer. Yeah. If I was Mark Kenyon.
That's right. Dadgummit. Oh, that was good.
Hey, he's been trying to get me in my text message today, dude. So I'm getting him back.
So we're to the public right now. That's right. That's so funny. So I love deer that die on the road because then you can drive up there and pick them up.
Yeah.
That's what we did. Nice. That's what we did.
Yep. So Eric doubled up. And then Tyler?
Man, yeah.
You just decided to just go out and just shoot a deer.
This magic moment when I shoot at a buck.
Tell me about this.
Yeah, so a big buck walked out.
Sorry. Let's give a little backstory.
Okay.
For those of you that don't know, there's a really good chance that's not the case. But last year, Casey and Tyler... I'm speaking with myself in third person because that's what jerks do. So I'm sorry, guys. I'm
no, dude.
But you get what I'm saying. Us two doubled up in Nebraska on two really nice bucks. Same evening, we were like 80 yards apart, heard each other shoot, and we had a party with some pizza and some bucks and all the dudes. It was awesome.
Dudes.
So we went back to Nebraska this year somewhat in search of a higher age class of buck. And we acquired some private ground to hunt on, which pretty much about near translates to opportunities at better, at least age class bucks across the board. I mean, I love hunting public land. We're in South Dakota right now hunting public ground. It's a lot of fun. My standards here are probably a little different than what they were hunting private ground because you just your options are different, right?
Yeah.
Got to hunt some alfalfa, which was bad at the bone.
I don't think I've ever hunted in an alfalfa field.
I've hunted on the edge of them.
Yeah.
Quite a bit because sometimes you can get public that backs up to it. Mm-hmm. But, this, dude, alfalfa is king in this country,
yeah,
right now, especially
dude.
This time of year. Deer are real patternable. In late September, I made a post about it the other day. I think that the last week of September might be my favorite month to hunt whitetails, like knowing that I could have a chance of killing a good buck.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, it's almost –
oh, guess what time it is?
Right now?
Oh, it just changed on yours. When I said that, it was 2:43.
Oh.
It's a
sneaky. Go vote, everybody.
Hey. y'all go get y'all's fortune cookies.
The month of November is volatile because it's kind of weather dependent, whereas the last week of September, it's either hot and they're doing the thing, or it's cold and they're doing the thing earlier. So it's like win-win, right? So it was a little warm whenever we were hunting.
Yeah.
And that leads us into Tyler Jones.
Yeah. So we didn't get to hear each other shoot this time around. That's one thing we didn't get to do. But we did. I'm just going to go ahead and spill the beans and then tell the story. We did make some awesome things happen like last year.
El Duble.
And I've got a text thread here I want to show. I want to tell people about here in a second.
Oh, wow. You can probably, since it's on film, you can show that camera.
Show the camera, for sure. So I'll just tell my story. I'll show the text, and that'll lead you into yours.
Okay, sounds good to me.
Or maybe you tell your part of your story first, and then I'll
No, there's a text message before that whole list.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I want you to read.
Yeah. Okay. So I'm hunting. We're both hunting this way, but the deer are like these properties. They're not exactly like if you were to say I want the perfect property, it's not, because I would want to hunt out of a tree stand if I could. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And these properties didn't have cover in the areas that deer were coming out. It would actually be like across the fence where they were coming out, but then they would end up pretty deep into these alfalfa fields. So I and KC both are sitting in hay bale blinds. They're like, I guess Redneck makes them.
I don't know.
And they look like a hay bale. I mean, they are legit. They're awesome. I mean, from 200-300 yards, you couldn't hardly even tell. And so we are hunting these things, and I'm hunting essentially the alfalfa, but also there's like – it's kind of getting into pothole country, so there's these low spots in some of these fields, and I'm hunting right in between two low spots, and one of which has like pretty good water on it. And I'm essentially kind of got a little bit of a – even though it's a big field, I've got a place where like the double whammy is looking to happen, you know. Like I've got water and food right mm-hmm. there, what they need, right? So the first night I had a really good buck come out into the alfalfa but just didn't get close. And I was surrounded by deer. They were everywhere. Eric was getting sick footage of turkeys and deer. We had like a 2-year-old awesome buck that was like kind of hard to pass for a public land hunter, you know. He came I bet for me to Eric, probably, if you're watching on video, you can, I mean, just about this close, I mean, yards. And anyway, we go into the second night, and we weren't seeing anything in the mornings. I mean, we hunted twice back in some timber in a creek system, and we didn't see anything in the mornings. It was
terrible.
Slow. It was hot, and it was just slow. But they were beautiful mornings, kind of foggy. I saw a bunch of turkeys, but... Then that next night that we went out to that same spot, I was kind of wanting to move the blind kind of to where I wouldn't look into the sun. But there were so many deer around. It's like almost like, well, I don't know if they're going to be on this side or this side for sure. The water wasn't, you know, the water, if they came to the water, they would be looking in the sun. But most of the bucks actually came from the east the night before. So I won't make the story too long, but essentially, I'm sitting there, some does, some turkeys drinking water, stuff around. And then all of a sudden, I look out. I think I was getting ready to try to, you know, relieve myself in the corner. And I look over, and there's a big buck at like 150, maybe 200 yards out in the field. He's head down feeding. And I'm like, oh, man. So I've got the wrong – we've got the side towards the sun blocked. You know, the windows are up. And these windows are hard to open. Like, they're loud. So I've got the other windows on the east side down. So I'm like, all right, I'll get these put up. And I can't remember how this goes, but it's all on video. We're going to put it out hopefully pretty soon and get as soon as we can get it edited up. Like, we're very busy right now, but we're working on it. I finally get these windows pulled up. And then because we've got like a end and a side and a see-through, and I don't want this buck seeing our silhouette, right? Well, all of a sudden, he just like decides after a few minutes of feeding, he's thirsty, and he's going straight to the water, walking, not eating, not feeding, not browsing anymore. And I'm just, like, freaking out, right? And I'm like, this – because he's big. And so, like, I'm like, ah, I got to get these other windows down towards the sun and also not get seen. And there's does at 25 yards. So I'm, like, pulling this stuff down. I'm, like, telling Eric, hey, peek out. Let me know if those does look. If they look, that means they heard us, so I'll stop. And then when they look down, he lets me know, right? So we're just working as a team. I finally get my window down. I'm like, okay, can you see him? Can you see him? And he's like, oh, yeah. Oh, he's huge. He's huge. Dude, hurry. He's huge. I'm like, dude, I'm trying. I was freaking out already.
Way to de-escalate the situation.
No. I actually like that a lot. Like, I don't like people who play the cool, man. I like it when people are excited, you know. And so I appreciate that about what was going on in that situation, because yeah. I was feeling the same way, you know. I'm like, oh, somebody who feels like me right now and has a mental freak out, you know. And so I'm like, I gotta get your window down so you can film it, right? So the sun is blaring, and I put my head down below the window, and I'm like, ah, let me know if they look. And I start pulling it down, and then all of a sudden he gets the water, and I'm like, oh my goodness. He's like, he's drinking water. I'm like, he's like, hurry. And I'm like, start pulling some more, and he goes, he's looking. I'm like, okay. And so I stopped, like, let me know when he stops looking. And so in the meantime, I didn't know, but I'd already ranged him, or I'd ranged the water. And so I knew how far he was at the middle of the water, which was 35. And in the meantime, he had turned around. It got kind of weird because he had heard me, I think. And so he stopped drinking and turned around, and he had stopped and was, like, looking at does or whatever. And I only had the window down. If you're on YouTube, you can see I had the window about this far down. The tripod and the camera are sitting, like, right here. And I'm like, dude, you just got to freehand it. You're just going to have to freehand it. And so we finally worked through that. He gets the camera off the tripod, and he's freehanding, getting sick footage. And I go, I'm like, you ready? Yeah. Draw back, looking dead into the sun. And this buck is got a couple pieces of grass in front of him. It's not much, but it's like my arrow will shoot over it. It's in between us. But visually, I can't see that great because it's like got seed heads and it's like blown out highlights. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And so I put it where it's supposed to be, and then I'm like, it's too high. He's fixing to jump the string. It's 35. It's string jumping distance. And he just kind of caught us, you know, making noise. So I put it low where I thought was kind of blinded, but, you know, felt pretty confident that's where the heart is. I put my 30 on there. This stuff happens so fast, you know. You just make mistakes, right? And so I shoot, and it doesn't even sound like it hits. I mean, it sounded like just mud, right? And I was so disappointed. Like, immediately I knew it was low. It's that low. And this is on video, y'all. Well, he kind of runs out like 15 yards and stops. And I was like, and he kind of limped as he was stopping. And I was like, oh, I think it might have hit the back of his leg or something, you know. So I just like, stay on him. I grab my arrow. And when I get my arrow on my string, I pull up, I range him. He's at 55, and he's kind of stopped. And so I crank my sight to 60, and I pull back, and he starts walking, but he's walking really slow because he's limping. And I put it on the front of his shoulder. I can tell I've hit him, right? So I take a desperation shot a little bit, but I put it on the front, like the point of his shoulder at 60. He's walking, like I said, very slow. So I felt pretty confident about it. I shoot, and I mean, it sounds like a bomb because it is. I mean, he was 60, you know, and it's just like, and hits. And dude, within two steps, there was so much blood on the side. Like, Eric was like, smoked him, dude. Now, like, we were so pumped, dude. And he runs back towards the fence line, and I'm like, he's not going to make the fence, dude. And he's filming. Eric's filming, you know, and all of a sudden, this dude goes straight through the fence. And he, like, the deer was limping, like, pretty bad. Mm-hmm. When I shot him, he acted like there was no more limp. Mm-hmm. It was crazy. Mm-hmm. I mean, he just bullet, dude. And he hits the fence so hard that this is a fairly new fence. It takes the top three strands off the fence for, like, a 50-yard section. Like, we had to repair the fence, dude. And game over.
Smoked.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So I get a text.
Let me give a little backstory here. I'm hunting a different pasture, mm-hmm. and it's just a hayfield. We don't have any cover to access. It's just the green square. And we're in a hay bale blind that we put out that day. And this is the day before. And we put it out in the back corner because there's a little low spot where deer are probably going to come out because it's what they do. They go to the back corner low spot. And sure enough, a big, mature 6-point, you know, just kind of like one of those deer that have the genetics to have a lot of tines, comes right up the gut, and he just looks at the hay bale blind, whips his head around, and then looks over at these other bucks that are out in the field and just trots over there and bumps them around. So
and they were they making noise or rubbing or something?
They were
right?
Rubbing on a tree.
You think he heard that?
And he heard that and went over and rubbed on that tree they were just rubbing on. He was kind of being a little bit aggressive.
Footage is cool, dude.
Yeah, it's sick. And so, like, we had a great evening that didn't produce a dead deer. And that's one of them false winds I kind of have been talking about a little bit.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like, we're here to kill some deer. So I was sad. So the next evening, we kind of had a plan that we were going to go in there and kind of, again, like you were talking about, move the blind a little bit so that we'd have a better shot and a better way to film. Because we were, like, at a 90 to where that deer came out. And there was no way to get footage of him where he was sitting except for me to film. Which you can't really hold a camera and a bow at the same time. So we had to make an adjustment. So while doing that, I pick up this blind and kind of move it about 10 or 12 degrees. And Greg sticks his head in and is like, well, I got bad news. What? He's like, we just bumped a deer when you're moving the blind. It's like, crap. And this is one of those deals where it's all or nothing. You know, like, if you feel like you bumped it, you're not going to see any deer.
Yeah, they were fixing to come out right there that night.
Mm-hmm.
That's what you
felt.
That's
right, exactly. It was going to do the same thing over again.
Yeah.
So
I shoot this deer, and at 7:38 p.m., Casey texts me, decent chance I zero. And I was like, oh, man. So then we go to recover my buck, and then things happen for you. And I can share the text after you tell kind of part of your story.
So, at, like, I don't know what time it was, but it's late.
I can tell you.
It's in, So tell me 3 minutes before that text message.
7:43. Decent chance I zero at 7:38.
Yeah. So like somewhere between those 5 minutes, everything changed. We have does like that just come from a weird place. They must have been bedded in the sun. I don't know where they were. You know, like they were just who knows where. But they like came right up beside our blind, just stomping, like running around. And we're, like, looking out the window trying to figure out where they are. Well, then I look back to the little buck hole back there, and sure enough, there's a buck standing there, same frame and everything as the big six from last night, shaking his head, looking around just like that deer did, and I start freaking out. I have about four breaths that are the most labored, anxiety-ridden breaths I've had, and this happens every once in a while when something an animal kind of takes me by surprise or kind of, like, gets me juiced, and I was there. And then I calmed myself down and started making decisions. And the weird thing is, y'all probably kind of see where this is going as I tell it. This deer had a very round rack that kind of came up in the front, and he had really tall brow tines. And right away I was like, it's the big six. So I never really looked at his rack again from that. To kind of just pin a bone that it's a different deer, and I completely messed that up. Still a mature buck. This deer actually decides to come on out as opposed to do something weird. And at that point, I'm like, oh, I'm shooting this deer. Like, he is guaranteed to give me a 35-yard shot at least where he's going. So I start grabbing my bow and getting ready. Well, that's weird, right? And because of where he was, Greg has to – I think we actually opened another window too, like one of those little tiny side windows, you know what I'm talking mm-hmm. about? So Greg could film out that. And he kind of catches us doing stuff. He's not panicked, but he stops and is looking. And I'm like, well, I got to shoot him right there. So I draw, and he's looking, and I anchor – well, on my bow – I'm shooting a different arrow setup than what I normally shoot. My other sight on my other bow, my newer bow, messed up while I was on my elk hunt. I hit it on a piece of brush or something, I don't know, but the fiber optic got messed up on it. So it would have not worked in a halo blind. It'd been dark, dark. So I shoot my turkey arrow setup and an arrow I hunted some pigs with, which is super light and 416 grains to be exact. Child setup for sure, dude. And I know some people are like rolling their eyes and stuff, but you know, long before the heavy arrow craze, it's what everybody was killing deer with.
Yeah.
You know, so like I was like, I'm gonna try it, you know, and it's a lot more about where you put it than what you shoot. And I still believe that for sure. Well, I have, because it's such a light setup with a fast bow, I have a 20 and a 40 pin because I can't even fit a 30 in between there. So what I decide to do is he's at about 33, 34 where he's at. I had the bush behind him was at 35, and he's right next to it. So I decided to put my 40 on pretty much the bottom of his belly, and or right below his belly, actually, and shoot. Well, I can tell that it's not going to be as low as I would like it. And after looking at the video, he does duck a decent amount at that range. And that's ducking distance for sure. I thought I was aiming low enough, but I wish I'd aimed lower. I end up hitting this deer high, quarter and two, which isn't the worst. You're much better off doing that than you are hitting a deer high, broadside, or quartering away, because you get that, I believe, I don't know what it's called, but where the spine dips down in the shoulders, that's that dead zone stuff people talk about. You end up hitting them in the spine or nothing up there. Where I hit this deer is like, I'm like 50-50. And then we watch the footage, and I'm like 30-70. Like, I just don't feel good. It's just a lot higher than what I wanted it to be. So I start loathing, you know, and just self-pity. Tyler, you have more text messages?
Yeah,
to read?
So we ended up, you know, meeting up later on. But so I'm recovering my deer, though, and I'm recovering, which we found him right where I thought he had fallen. We we take some pictures, throw this sucker in the truck, and we heard that KC might have shot, right? As soon as I get in the truck, I'm like, oh, because I thought he was zeroing, right? And when I get in the truck, I see this text. And this is a group of texts here. I'll show you on YouTube. You can see how they're written. They're in thoughts. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9.
We might post this or something.
Yeah,
a story or
9
something.
Texts, right? So there's 9 texts there. And they go like this. Well, decent chance I zero. And then a few minutes later, shot the 6. A little high. But I'm feeling pretty good. It's not him. 8 point. Not as big. Replay makes me feel worse. What a joke. Headed back.
That's me.
So I was like, and those are all done while we're taking pictures. Mm-hmm. And so I was just like, whoa. Okay. I'm feeling bad for KC, you know, because I know the feeling. Like, you know, it's the feeling that I had literally all happened in a split second when I missed that deer at 35.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to land.com today to turn one day into today. Because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier.
Yeah, and Market House provides everything from grass-fed beef to free-range chicken, grass-fed lamb, and even wild-caught king crab and seafood. Market House keeps small farm values, trusted sources, and clean, mouth-watering food for your family.
And like I said, Market House ships all orders overnight. Order today, enjoy tomorrow. And you can even keep the camo on for dinner, even if the filet mignon is on the table. With Market House, it doesn't matter because the cuts and catches come straight to your door. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box.
And everybody knows how hard it is these days to find high-quality, sustainably sourced meat and seafood at their local grocery store.
Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because the last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate Batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey.
Jump the stream, right? And that's the feeling I had. So anyway, that's what happened. We get back to camp, little Airbnb or whatever, and we start looking at the footage on a bigger screen. We, you know, get it plugged into a computer. And we kind of come to terms with maybe the shot has – maybe there's some optimism. You know.
Yeah,
I mean?
So there's a couple things going on there with the shot. The arrow hits the deer and kind of is on a downward trajectory, which is a good thing. He's quartering two, which is a good thing because their vitals kind of go up in the back. And the most encouraging thing to me is that as the deer runs off, the arrow's wiggling around inside there. If the arrow's lodged in something, like a spine or a shoulder or something, it's just going to look like it's just a part of the deer's body. Mm. You know, it's just going to move with the body. And that's not what the arrow is doing. It looks like it was kind of like, for lack of a better way to describe it, sloshing around, which means I'm probably in the body cavity, which I'm like, okay, looks pretty good. But it's not smoke, so it's time to hang out, eat. But in this situation, the deer's either dead or he's not, pretty much. So we decide after about 3.5 hours to head out. The guy we know there has a tracking dog that he's wanting to kind of train. So we go out with the dog and just get right behind them to track this thing to see how far it goes. I'm feeling about 50-50, maybe even a little more optimistic than that at that point in time, because I think everybody felt pretty good. Like, there wasn't anybody that was, like, polar on that deal, mm-hmm. you know. So we go out to the pasture, go to the – I did this – there's a thing that you need to do if you think you got a tracking dog and you think it's a weird shot. Do not go over there and walk around. Mm-hmm. Just leave it be. And that's what I did that night. I learned that from some other experiences that the dog needs just a fresh spot. And sure enough, we got there right away. Dog hits the deer trail. And within about 10 yards, we found splatter, just, you know, sprays of blood. And at that point in time, it's like, oh, dead deer. You know, like every pump of the heart that you can follow, it's just like confidence goes up. I'm like, oh, we're finding this guy. Like, this is going to happen. And ends up 70 yards, dead buck.
Deader than a doorknob.
Just stiff after. Like, I mean, he died within seconds.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and I heard, as soon as I shot him, I stuck my head out the window. I don't know if we got this on film or not, but I stuck my head out the window trying to listen, and I heard a bunch of crashing. But he ran off into some pretty thick stuff, and I didn't know if that was just him breaking stuff or if it was him falling or what. But
give a quick breakdown of what your boy Giannis likes to call the necropsy.
The necropsy on this deer. So I like to, any shot, figure out where the arrow went. I think it's pretty cool. It helps you learn a lot about a deer as an archery hunter. And so I had an assumption as to what happened on this deer, and it was right on the spot. Assuming that it was lethal, right? And that's what happened. A deer has a major artery, runs out the top of the heart called the aorta. You probably remember that when you study hearts in anatomy class. Well, the aorta doesn't stop at the top of the heart. It actually feeds the whole back half of an animal, all right? So that runs up, splits the lungs, and runs down the back, the bottom of the spine. That's why you see guys hit deer high and still kill them quick. It's because they hit the aorta, and that's what I did. I actually shot and hit both lungs and cut the aorta in half. This deer got cold and went to sleep on his feet. Mm-hmm. So it's not something you can aim for, but it is an extremely lethal shot when you hit it. I actually hit my first bull elk there and killed him. Really great blood trail. Very similar situation. So, yeah. Very thankful and blessed mm-hmm. that worked out. I needed the lift there because I was feeling a little down after some of the elk hunting and other stuff that I've done already this season. And Nebraska double happened again.
Man, got
pretty
it done.
Exciting times. So mm-hmm. with that, look forward to some Nebraska deer hunting coming out, possibly on Meat Eater and The Element pretty soon. We'll see how that all shakes out. But for now, Eric, we're going to hop into some October Q&A. We're going to try to move through these pretty quick, guys. So get your pen and paper out, take some notes, and let's just get down to business.
Mm-hmm. All right, let's do it. First question, what do you do if you're driving and a deer runs across the road? Legal hunting on both sides.
Gas it.
I put a pen on Onyx usually, mark it, and then I'll go back and think about, like, what do I do with – where he was at, what was he doing, what is he going to do.
Yep, ditto. Just want to figure out what he was doing and why he was there.
Yep.
Second question. During rifle season, during rifle season, I've heard deer noises from both deer and hunters. Making a move could be deadly to the deer or to me, depending on the source. Any suggestions how to tell the difference?
Yeah, it's pretty hard to tell the difference, I guess. Sounds like you're just hunting real close to where other people are, so maybe that would be my suggestion, is to just maybe find something a little more remote. I don't walk around with a decoy, and if it's, I don't know if it's like law where you're at, but if you're worried about other people shooting, then wearing some orange will help with that.
Or you can get you some private permission.
Yeah.
And then might not be so worrisome.
Yeah, but I don't know as far as like telling the difference. Now, I will say that there are like nuances to that hunters do that deer don't. Like deer hardly ever rattle, or they hardly ever fight for 3 minutes straight, right? Like, so, and they don't do it in sequences either. So like you don't hear it like every 10 minutes some rattling or something like that. So that's probably one of the things to key in on. Another thing is like deer grunts are not near as loud usually as what humans make the sound. Now, Tyler, on the other hand, experienced something in Iowa in 2019, mm-hmm. That the deer sounded like a motorcycle. So, like, every once in a while it does happen. But in general, if you're hearing a grunt and it sounds really, really loud, it's probably a dude.
Also, deer don't really make sounds and patterns very often.
Mm-hmm.
So, that's not what a rattling sequence, or it sounds like that from a person. Also, grunts, you know, won't be timed out evenly or whatever, you know.
A lot of times, too, outside of rattling, grunts and snort wheezes, if a deer's doing that, you can probably make the noise back at him and bring him to you as opposed to you having to
move.
Yeah.
All right. Lots of media tell you what to look for in the hunting area. However, how do you know when it's time to move on besides not seeing deer or sign?
Besides not seeing deer or sign?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, that's the only things I'm really looking for, I think.
I think that's...
I mean, outside of people.
Yeah, I mean, there is, like, maybe one situation where you're not seeing deer or sign because the deer are elsewhere, and then later, days or weeks later, deer show up on that property.
Yeah.
I know a public place like that. So, that might be, like, the caveat. But, I mean, if you know us... If we don't see deer or good sign on the first sit, we are out of there.
Yeah, for
so,
the most part.
I would be more aggressive.
When are we getting merch back in stock?
Send questions like that to Meat Eater, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I mean, that's them. So.
Send that to them and get them on the ball on that.
Yeah.
Thank y'all for trying to support us, though.
Yeah.
What are three reasons to write off a piece of public or hunting property, meaning you'll never go back to it?
Never go back. Wow.
Yeah, that's – I don't know. I don't know, man. I mean, I told myself I wouldn't go back to Nebraska, and then I did, and then I killed bucks. So maybe there's not a reason to never go back. I don't know.
This isn't something I've dealt with, but some parts of the country, if – there's wolves that move in, I probably would never go back.
Yeah.
Not because I'm scared of wolves, but just because they have terrible, there's terrible repercussions on deer populations.
Grizzlies, on the other hand, you would never go back.
I
mean, that or like construction that changes the landscape. Like if somebody is putting in a highway and clearing trees, you know, then whatever, or if you know, like if you're hunting urban deer or whatever, and somebody puts in a big new house or building or whatever, then yeah.
There's also a situation where I like to kind of vote with my pocketbook sometimes, for lack of a better way of putting it. So like, if you really disagree with some management practices or some things going on with a just say department, you know, whatever the level of that is, that would be a reason I might not go back to a place.
Yeah. I think also maybe like lack of cover would be like if I went to a place, I can think of some places in Kansas especially where like we went and looked at them in the first year or two and we were like, they ain't going to happen there. Mm-hmm. And they ain't going to grow a tree out there for the next 100 years. So
yeah.
Yeah, maybe that too.
Do you guys use scents on your hunts? Cover scents, deer urine, or anything?
TT and scrapes.
Yeah, not anymore. I used to mess around with it, but I just don't anymore.
Yeah, I don't think I have in the last couple of years either, especially. So.
Mm-hmm.
How do I try to start a career in the hunting industry? Riding, filming hunts, etc.
So if you are a writer, I would just write and write and write and self-publish anywhere you can get it. Volunteer to do free work. That's a great way. I mean,
that's in any outside of writing too.
Yeah,
right?
Absolutely. Tyler and I volunteered to do free work for a long time, but it was for ourselves.
Yeah.
You know, we so like the hunting industry is a terrible term, so, but I understand why you used it. I try to think that I operate outside of that a little bit, but I definitely understand that we are part of that too. So like, if you really want to do that and your goal, it depends on what your goal is. If your goal is to get rich, don't even try. Your goal is to do something you love for a living, maybe not try. You know, like I know a lot of people who participate in other very fulfilling careers who get to hunt a lot. So if that's what you're trying to do, maybe look at that. But if you want to be in the hunting industry, my best advice is to do things not on camera. So, like, for instance, our friend Tony Peterson has spent some time
on
in front of the camera.
Note.
On that note, has spent some time on camera, but he, for a long time, wrote. And what that allows you to do, and he still writes and does a good job, but what that allows you to do is hunt without the burden of a camera, so you can kill a lot of things and give have a lot of perspective on killing stuff. And then... beyond that, our friend Chris Webb sitting across the room over here, and his advice, which I was also thinking of, is to become an accountant, work in the industry for a business who is in the hunting industry, and then you like are in the industry, but you're doing something that is maybe more valuable than being an influencer.
Yeah. So like essentially like third party consulting or something like that, you know, for somebody who's in that, and then you get to hang out with people who hunt, and maybe they invite you on a deer hunt sometime or something.
You ever get that feeling you're stuck inside staring at screens and a primal urge kicks in? You crave wide open spaces, fresh air, the chance to connect with the land. Well, maybe it's time to find your own piece of the wild, but searching for property can be a maze. That's where Land.com comes in. They got millions of listings across the country, from mountain ranches to hidden fishing holes. Their search tools are like a seasoned guide helping you narrow down what you want. Land.com isn't just about buying and selling. It's about finding a place to hunt, fish, explore, or simply sit by a campfire and listen to the crickets. So head over to Land.com today to turn one day into today, because trust me, there's nothing quite like the feeling of standing on your own piece of earth.
Market House has the cleanest, leanest, juiciest meat and seafood shipped to your home overnight. Expect the service of a local butcher and the convenience of a large supplier.
Yeah, and Market House provides everything from grass-fed beef to free-range chicken, grass-fed lamb, and even wild-caught king crab and seafood. Market House keeps small farm values, trusted sources, and clean mouthwatering food for your family.
And like I said, Market House ships all orders overnight. Order today, enjoy tomorrow. And you can even keep the camo on for dinner, even if the filet mignon is on the table. With Market House, it doesn't matter because the cuts and catches come straight to your door. Unlike many online butchers, you can grab just one meal's worth or lock in for a subscription box.
And everybody knows how hard it is these days to find high-quality, sustainably sourced meat and seafood at their local grocery store.
Choose from grass-fed and grass-finished beef, American Wagyu, free-range poultry, grass-fed lamb, wild-caught king crab, seafood, and more.
For 15% off your first order, use code COUNTRY at checkout. Just visit markethouse.com.
That's markethouse.com. And use the code COUNTRY.
Hey, Steve here. I want to talk about something crucial for any outdoor enthusiast, which is battery reliability. I've got Interstate batteries powering my gear. I have Interstate batteries in my camper. I run an Interstate battery in my boats. I use Interstate batteries because The last thing I want is to be left powerless. Interstate Batteries isn't just another battery company. They are outrageously dependable. In Alaska, the boat dealer that we use for getting stuff and repairs, he uses Interstate. Whether you're gearing up for hunting season, planning your next RV trip, or getting your boat ready, Interstate has the battery for all your needs. With over 150,000 dealer locations, the power you need is always nearby. Interstate Batteries aren't just about power. It's about being prepared for any situation. Don't let a dead battery ruin your adventure. Head over to interstatebatteries.com, use their store locator, and equip yourself with a battery that won't let you down. When you're out in the wild or just on your daily commute, an Interstate battery is your key to a dependable journey.
Best place to find bucks in October on public land in Iowa.
Ooh, Tyler.
Over a scrape. I mean, find the biggest scrape you can find and get them. I would say maybe it's just October. Mm-hmm. I mean, later in October, there's probably some ridge stuff you can hunt, like saddles and just top of the ridges if there's any cruising and cold weather comes in. Being in cornfields could be good places in October. If you have some private access, you can also find those big scrapes on those edges of those fields. And that's kind of my best advice right now.
Tips to take a buck in Tennessee big timber without trail cameras. Hunting this year without tech for fun.
Say it again. Tennessee, the first part of it.
Tips to take a buck in Tennessee big timber without trail cameras.
Man,
clear cut edges, finding the feed tree, like a big white oak that's got some good acorns or some sort of soft mast, maybe. Considering this is an October podcast, that would be probably some things I'd look at.
I would look for sign, and I'm going to take a page out of the playbook of one of our good friends who's a killer and say, hunt the same stand. Once you find good sign, then you know deer move through. Hunt the same stand on good winds, mm-hmm. and you'll kill a deer with consistency.
That's a good call.
A lot of times run and gun can get in your way because you're always trying to outsmart deer, and you're leaving deer to go find deer, and then you just end up just burning yourself out.
Mm-hmm. When do you start calling, and how often do you call/rattle?
KC called early in South Dakota one year.
Yeah, you know, I as I've gotten older, don't hardly ever blind call. So it's all about seeing a deer. This is a Bill Winky thing, right? So Bill Winky of formerly of Midwest Whitetail, you know, he built that brand a lot off of like his expertise in deer hunting. And Bill never calls to a deer he doesn't see. So I think that we get into the situation sometimes where we're answering these questions, and it almost sounds like we're just like giving you smart aleck answers. But I really believe that now. Rattling is one thing I would do blind some, but it's a different setup than like in a stand. Like you're moving around country, rattling a little bit, seeing if you can make somebody poke their head out.
What date are you switching from bed to feed to a different strategy?
You're good at this. A cold front in late October, pretty much.
It's 21st? 23rd.
When I killed was the 23rd.
23rd.
Yep. I'd say you could do it earlier, depending on where you're at in the U.S. Mm-hmm. And depending on how cold the cold front is and other things. If you have trail cameras running, that'll help you decide too.
How to determine natural food sources in pine flats / oak creeks other than obvious acorns?
Look for browse pressure. Look for areas that the deer frequent and then see what they're eating there.
Pine flats and what?
Oak bottoms.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, pretty much it.
We got a new hunter here. Can you explain the process of tagging a deer? What is needed?
It's different in every state.
It is.
This is something that we try our best to do well because we film everything we do, right? Mm-hmm. But it's also a big burden because it's different everywhere you go. You could be in South Dakota and they don't require a tag until you get to the truck.
But don't load it in the back of the truck without tagging it.
Right.
Weird.
Yeah, I know. Mm-hmm. or you could be on Texas Public and they won't let you quarter a deer out, and they won't let you move it to, you know, you till you have tagged it. So, like, there's just different process, and you basically, wherever you're hunting, have to go to the game department website or call a game warden and ask them about the process prior to killing that deer, really, because you just, you know, there's a lot of gray area in the way that the laws are written. Mm-hmm. So it just depends on if somebody wants to be, you know, a rear end to you and, you know, give you a ticket or be a nice guy potentially if you did something wrong.
Yeah.
You know, it's up to their discretion, how they're feeling, who they are. But, I mean, in some states, it's like the way it's written, it's almost like you can't even touch the deer until you put a tag on it. But then how do you not touch it without putting
That's
a tag
on it? That's why when you watch people hunt in Iowa, they always show on video the tag.
Yeah.
Because they're like real strict about it there. Mm-hmm. Some states have gone full-fledged, like, 21st century, and you just do a digital check-in, no animal tag necessary at all, and I like that a lot.
Mm-hmm.
However, there's states kind of like Texas that are in the middle of that where you can do an online license purchase and have an online thing, but you have to make your own tag out of duct tape and write some stuff on it. And it's like, well, what's the use in that?
I'm telling you.
Yeah, dumb. Hey, that's right. Y'all listening, you hear me.
This says, any tips for hunting a pin plantation? I think they mean pine.
Pine plantation.
Yeah, thick cover with limited shooting.
That might
wings.
Be a typo on our behalf, too. Pine plantation?
Yeah.
We're limiting what?
Thick cover with limited shooting lanes.
Well, I'm guessing you can't cut shooting lanes here. You probably would want to hunt the edge and shoot a deer quartering away that's going into your property.
Another take I might have, it would be hunt the rut and do some still hunting, which actually isn't still, like walk around a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
Best strategy for hunting mule deer and whitetails in early October in Canada.
Eric from Canada, no less.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
I
think, what is it? Barley fields are up there and stuff. They got kind of all kinds
canola.
Of weird ag up there.
Yeah.
I would say that, like, I don't know. I imagine they're still feeding heavy and ag fields. And I think from what I've seen in some of that stuff, which, you know, Canada is a big place.
Uh-huh.
But you could glass them coming in and out. And before it gets rut time, really bed to feed pattern stuff, you know, like, mm-hmm. like same stuff, like find them in fields where they're coming out and then go hunt them 100 yards back in there, you know, or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Favorite early to mid October locations for picking up a buck?
Scrapes yeah. are going to start opening up this time of year, and you're going to have an issue a little bit where there's a bunch of random ones. But if you can find the scrapes, like, especially if you correlate it to Onyx, like the ones that make sense about where deer will move around, you can put a camera there, and those scrapes will usually end up being like season long scrapes.
Yeah, and like maybe like the last 5 days or so, it starts to get close to the rut. I mean, get on mm-hmm. fence and creek crossings, on trails and stuff mm-hmm. too.
Mm-hmm. If you're in persimmon country,
yeah,
persimmon or oaks,
uh-huh.
you know,
soft mass mm-hmm. type stuff too. Yeah.
When you go to a new spot, do you put cams out even for a short time, or is it for future information?
Sometimes.
We put out cams a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. In fact, we use it both ways a lot.
Hunter
times.
Put out trail cameras here.
Yeah.
You know, so like, and we're only here for like a week.
When to move cams on public? Not getting summer picks, should I leave them for season / rut?
I don't know.
Depends on where they're at.
Yeah, if you have like historical data that's a good spot, then I'd leave them. But if you don't, I don't know how many cams you're saying, but you say cams in one spot. If it's two or more cams in one spot, then you should definitely spread them out. You should move one of them at least, you know, and try to get a different type of habitat or different type of bedding or whatever, you know, food source, whatever it is. But I'm just not keen on like ever just having cameras soak too long without having things on them.
Yeah.
Do you place cameras in less trafficked / more strategic areas, or feeder pens / more predictable areas?
Okay. So, like, this is kind of a private land question. He's talking about feeders, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Depends on what you're trying to accomplish. If you're trying to take inventory, put them on the feeder. If you're trying to figure out where you can kill one in daylight or what access he's taking, you know, the less traffic there is.
I think you'd start near feeders a lot, though, and work your way back, like Casey's saying. If you're trying to pinpoint where you can kill them, then you might work your way back with that mm-hmm. camera. But, I mean, a lot of times Casey and I will find deer that are using someplace at night, and we have a pretty good idea where the bedding is. So if we find that deer, we know where to go mm-hmm. after that, right?
Yeah.
And so then you just move from there.
Think about my home property's 20 acres. I just run a camera on the feeder, and then I kind of just know where you might be able to shoot one besides the feeder.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so mm-hmm. like if you only need one option, that would be the thing.
Mm-hmm. Hunting heavy timber, how do you decide what's too close and not close enough to trails?
Ain't nothing too close.
Mm.
I mean, pretty much. Like last night, I was I had to hook my foot to get to one of the shots that was in my shot window, but I didn't have to use it. But you know, if I was going to shoot the one window that was like on the tree, I was pretty much on. Then yeah, it makes it difficult. But really, I mean, 5 to 15 yards is just as good as it gets. You know.
As long as you're not super high, 5 yards could be tough.
Right, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, dude, 12 yards is like the best.
Oh, I love it. Yeah, 15-yard shots. Mm-hmm. Oh, my
Give
goodness.
Give them to me, please.
Like, yeah, and you almost can't be, like, even if a deer's coming down the trail and he's going to go right by your tree, you could shoot him in the chest at 10 yards. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, and it's lethal,
mm-hmm.
yeah. by the way.
We've seen that.
How much cover do you want in a tree?
That's a good question.
Yeah, it's hard to quantitate, too.
Yeah, because the question that really is being asked as in a more expanded format is, like, too much cover can make it hard to get shots,
mm-hmm.
But not enough cover can make it hard to get a deer close or even get drawn back, right?
Mm-hmm.
Ideally, you want, I don't know, if I was going to say a percentage of cover in a 180 direction around you, like pretty waist high or so, maybe, like, ideally, like, I don't know, 50% or so, you know?
You know what I think about when I think about this? A couple things. I like multi-trunked ash trees
because
I can get in the middle of them, and there's usually, like, 5 trunks, and then you got windows all around that, and you just are not perceived in that. And then another thing I think about when they ask this question is, what's a redneck blind look like? You know what I'm talking about? If somebody's hunting out of a redneck blind, how much window do they have compared to coverage?
Yeah.
And it's probably like 60% coverage, 40% window.
Yeah,
you're probably right. That's probably pretty close to like what would be ideal. Now, I'll hunt out of a lot less cover than that and have.
Yeah.
You know, this is kind of expanding his question because it's a good question. Mm-hmm. But backdrop is just as important as cover. Like, I don't want to hunt on a telephone pole mm-hmm. in the middle of a field. But if I can hunt in a telephone pole in a closed canopy – it probably ain't
or with
that
a big cedar tree behind you,
yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
It probably ain't that big of a deal.
Yeah. Yeah.
When do you target rub lines in and out of bedding, year round or time specific?
I think if you were going to target a rub line for me, like late October would be the time. I think outside of that, I don't know if I would even target a rub line. Would you?
I don't really believe in rub lines.
I can think of one place that I believe in a rub line.
I think that rub line is there because there's already a trail there.
Well, yeah. But it's a rub line. It's still a line of rubs
mm-hmm.
that's created down a trail.
Yeah. But so, I think in my mind, like when I hear people talk about rub lines, they're kind of like just a line of rubs through the timber that is the one indicator as to why deer are there.
Mm-hmm.
But that's just kind of what I go to in my mind. So, but your answer is good.
Yeah. If you were going to, mm-hmm. like, before the rut. Once the rut really gets cranked, I don't think there's a whole lot of rhyme or reason to think.
If we're thinking about the same place, which I think we are, late season – was the time to hunt that because the rub line developed as bucks used that trail.
Mm.
And that's how you kind of knew they were around.
When is KC going to remember his epiphany about rubs from 2 years ago?
Dadgummit. That's what I just thought about when y'all said this. I don't know. We might need to just have a big brainstorming session about this because it had a lot to do with that.
Dude, it's on a podcast somewhere.
You think?
I don't think I have the time to go back. That would have been 2022 October, right? Like last year,
yeah.
October.
Uh-huh.
It would have been late October, probably. But that's like potentially 6 hours of podcast listening. You know, I don't know if I have that time right now.
It had something to do with correlating multiple rubs together and coming up with a inference from that. I don't know if it was a territory thing.
I think it was a territory thing, but I can't remember either. It was good. Sorry.
Yeah, I felt like I was going to kill a deer doing that, and then I forgot.
Should I focus on the trails leading to ag or focus on beds?
It depends on what you're wanting to say you're focusing. I guess if you're focusing on hanging a trail camera, I'm all about putting on ag and then figuring it out after that. If you're focusing on hunting, then I might be a little more apt to try to find bedding, especially if you know where the destination is. You know?
I would just personally say focus on the trails. Like, if you're saying beds and not bedding, which I'm going to differentiate between those two things that you're saying, like, I don't care about a specific bed.
Yeah, I'm with you.
Yeah. Just focus on the trail. You can get close to the bedding, maybe figure out where it's at, but hunt the trail.
Yep.
Big woods bedding. Where do you start looking?
Is there such a thing?
Yeah.
Anything big woods is tough, right?
It's different. In different parts of the country, because we got big woods where we live that are a lot different than the Allegheny National Forest.
Right.
And so I think my first thing to say is that I don't know, because I have not hunted that stuff because I don't like it. It's beautiful, but it's not my thing. Where we're from, you might have some more stuff on the big woods stuff, but where we're from, I'll focus on the thickest cover I can find within big woods. Briar thickets, cedars, stuff like that.
Yeah, stuff that's thick under 5 foot of elevation. Or 5 foot over the ground, yep.
What to look for on a topo map or on X to find buck bedding in Iowa?
I mean, just find all THB spots, I think. I don't know. Just
no,
look
at
okay, here it is. Find stuff that's in more marshy areas, and on the fringe of that is a good place to find buck bedding in Iowa. So like oxbows that end up, because oxbow is because it's flat, right? Mm-hmm. So it's going to send a sub irrigated water system out onto that flat even further, which creates reeds or whatever that might be, that willows that's thick right in that area, right? So anything that's really flat, has a bunch of horseshoe bends in it, could definitely create that, especially if it's outside of big timber. So just, you know, anything like that you can see on the map, you may see trails and stuff like that too from the map in those areas. That's probably a good place to find deer bedding. Now, when it comes to buck bedding, that's just a matter of, I mean, it really is just a matter, like, you know, everybody knows about, what was it called, the buck nest or whatever they had, like when they were back at Midwest, right? That was all, I think they just found that from hunting. They didn't just locate it on a map necessarily. You don't know that bucks are bedding there necessarily until you show up and see it in person, I think.
Are grip and grins still cool?
Oh, yeah.
They're the coolest.
They're my favorite.
There's nothing cooler.
No, there is.
Is there?
Gripping grins with the whole crew behind you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, really, like, the artistic, the abstract, the hold the chin, I'm not all big on all that stuff personally, you know. I'm not saying they're not cool, but, like, the coolest is a gripping grin, dude. I'm happy that I shot this deer. I put a lot of work into it, and I want to grab it, show it off. This is what it is. You feel the deer, and you understand that this is something that was put on Earth as a renewable resource for us to eat and enjoy.
I can't not grin.
I know. You're grinning right now. Look at you.
I know, man.
Dadgummit.
Hunting private this year and deer moving all day long, almost every day. What would you –
What's the problem?
This sounds like an awesome
When thing. Would you get out and in?
Oh, yeah, this there is a problem.
Yeah.
For sure.
I would go in early in the morning and kill a deer in the morning.
Early in the morning.
Yeah.
Rising to my feet.
You just might need to think about access some. Like, just because deer are moving doesn't mean you can't find a way in and out. You might need to look at maybe creek bed access.
Yeah, it's good.
I don't know much about your property. Boat access is, you know, maybe you got some water. I don't know. Also, as weird as it sounds, your own private, if those deer are used to ATVs or something, yeah, just drive your ATV right to where you're hunting and get out and hunt.
And I was going to say, just hunt close to the road.
Yeah.
I mean, if you're on private, like, deer hang out near road systems often, and if they know and hear the same thing happening every day and you don't change anything, just go in off the road and pop in there real quick, right, and do the thing.
Mm-hmm.
I find so many deer stands in the woods. If straps are old, do you assume it's abandoned?
If they're older than like a year old, maybe. But if they're like from the last year or two, I don't necessarily assume that. It's more about, like, is there vines growing on it or, like, during deer season, right? Or is there a trail coming in and out that shows that a dude's been walking in there the same way every time? Is there boot tracks? Is there mud on the steps? Like, it's more than just the straps being old, for mm-hmm. sure.
Do you bear shaft tune arrows?
Mm-hmm.
I don't, but they make me at the bow shop.
I do, for sure.
Trying to get the right sight tape and having trouble at 60. Tips when you're between tape?
You make your own. Or you could maybe – this is where things get weird, right? You could add a little weight to your string, potentially, to kind of change some things there. Or you could let – this is probably the better thing. I'm kind of thinking through this. Go up a pound or down a pound on your draw weight, and then you will be able to hit the tape better. That's the thing to do. Change your draw weight just a touch.
Okay. What Onyx features are you looking for in relation to pinch points, bedding, and food?
I like how the term Onyx has become synonymous with map features. That's cool. So say that again. Sorry, I kind of caught up on that.
What Onyx features are you looking for in relation to pinch points, bedding, and food?
Onyx features in relation to pinch points, bedding, and food. Man, it sounds like you just told me what to look for. So I'm not trying to make fun of your question. I'm just trying to understand. Maybe, like, what does that look like on Onyx? Let's go that route, if that's what he's asking. On Onyx, a lot of times pinch points are going to look like places that topo lines change quite a bit, or there is, like, two corners of timber that touch, something like that. Food is an easier one. They have an oak layer that you can look at. And they also have a crop data layer that is really helpful. We've been using a lot the past few days, actually. That's something to keep in mind on there is they use the agriculture tax exemption information from the previous year. So that's what it was in the last tax year when you're looking at it. That means that oftentimes corn and beans are flip-flopped. Or every 2 out of 3 years, it'll be different, just depending on the farmer. So something to keep in mind there. But that's my best way to answer that, I believe.
Sounds good. I'm going to answer or ask this question.
Okay.
Because Eric has to take a quick break.
Y'all some breaky? I mean,
if you're listening, I did not take a break. If you're watching, I might have, but I didn't. Okay. How do you find saddles on Onyx, and what makes a good one?
Lots of Onyx questions. That's cool. What makes a good saddle? How do you find them? Topo lines are the way to do it for sure. And what makes a good saddle is one that is not very high, if that makes sense. So a really deep dip usually just ends up being a creek or something. But a good saddle, from my experience, like, you can be up in some of that hill country stuff that's, like, in Iowa or Pennsylvania, Wisconsin, and you're talking about drastic hills and small saddles in between them. The saddles I really like are, like, you got, like, an 80-foot tall here and a 60-foot tall point down there, and then it dips down to 40-foot above the bottom right there. Like, deer are going to use that a lot. Mm-hmm. But deer oftentimes aren't going 180 feet up to go over the saddle. Mm-hmm. So that, to me, means a good saddle. Also, another thing that makes a good saddle is what's on each side of the saddle. If you got a Walmart on one side of the saddle, he's probably not going to Walmart. Mm-hmm. You know, but if you got, you know, it's September and you got good beans over there and you got good bedding cover on this side of the saddle, good chance he's using the saddle.
Mm-hmm. Also, you know, where you shot your buck in Nebraska is kind of like a small saddle. You know what I mean? It's a low spot in the field because there's a draw that comes up right there.
Yeah.
So, essentially, it's just the quickest spot up to the field there for them, the easiest slope, you know, or whatever. And so, it can be very subtle.
What gear does a guy need to get set up with a saddle hunting setup?
Okay. So, like, the essentials of a saddle. You're going to need a way to get up the tree, which usually means sticks or a single stick. I'm a sticks guy. I ain't going to that one stick stuff. You're going to need a saddle, which is the diaper, and you're going to need a rope, which is a tether that runs to your saddle. And essentially, those are the three things that you have to have to saddle hunt. Now, people use platforms, including me, because it's the way to go, but you don't have to have one. A lot of guys, you started out standing on your stick, right, Eric?
Yep.
And it worked.
Mm-hmm.
Did you shoot a doe doing that?
No, that was out of just a hanging.
Tree stand?
Yeah.
Okay, gotcha. But it's a thing. I've done it when I forgot my platform.
You can even
Chris almost had to do it yesterday.
You can even find branches to, like, stand on.
Yeah,
like, good
that's
ones.
Right. And, in fact, I've gotten in a tree and done that instead because it's hard to hang your platform in some things. And there's all kinds of additions outside of that, too. I mean, a lineman's belt is highly advised for safety purposes. Yeah, what else? Am I missing anything else?
You can get mechanical carabiners. I mean, you can go you can go pretty deep into this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But they're pretty handy, especially on your lineman's rope as you're going up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
and then outside of that, everything's mostly just what you'd need for tree stand hunting, right?
Yeah.
So, like, a bow arm or a bow hanger is pretty important. A backpack, things like that.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Trying to get into saddle hunting on public land to be more mobile, what's a good option?
Cruiser XC.
Those are comfortable for sure, and we use them. There's the saddle game in the last 5 years is really, like, the competition level has increased and made a lot of good saddles that have come to market. So, I mean, you know, you can think about it in terms of what can I pay the least for, or something that's in the middle of the road that's pretty good but inexpensive, or you can think of stuff that's, you know, fairly expensive and very comfortable. So, you know, but, like, I've put on three saddles, and the Cruiser XC is my favorite to put on so far. Actually, I put on four saddles.
Mm-hmm.
So far, the Cruiser XC is my most comfortable saddle.
You can go to themeateater.com and go to their store and check out the saddle selections over there if you like.
Mm-hmm.
What kind of climbing sticks are you guys running?
I've been using some Gifted.
Yep.
Yeah, for sure. Carbon Timber Ninjas.
C1s, they also sell those on the store at Meat Eater.
I like them a lot. But
I do too.
You've used them too, but your opinion's different because of one little detail.
It's the ropes, yep. I would use Amsteel ropes, and I would use those, which I still don't have any Amsteel ropes, but I've got the ropes that I had last year, and I used them yesterday or last couple of days when I've been in the trees. So,
how do you use rattling?
I use Muddy Pro sticks as well. They're more affordable than the Carbon Timber Ninjas. So if you're looking for something a little more affordable and you don't mind putting extra weight on your pack, then those are really, really just intuitive sticks.
How do you use rattling antlers without a buck circling downwind?
I think you predict the buck circling downwind.
Yeah, you do. Mm-hmm. And that's exactly why we don't do a lot of blind calling, because they're going to circle downwind and they're going to get your wind.
In fact, There is a prime example of the buck circling downwind in the most recent Element video. It's called Deer Bums. It's got our friend, loyal best bro, Whitetail Bums. Sorry, mm-hmm. That's right. So, Eric Gentry, Michael Stoll, Greg Latham all did a lot of hunting last fall, and we did a little compilation. And our boy Michael is a young man, but he gets after it with the deer. He's pretty aggressive, which I like, Michael. I'm all about the aggression when it comes to deer. I kind of like flex on them, you know. He has a clip where a big, mature Texas public land buck circles in downwind to him. And he thought that he had this taken care of because he's hunting up next to a water body. But the deer slipped in between him and the water body, like, real close. So I think if you're going to blind rattle, the thing to do is to, like, be looking around hard, mm-hmm. looking for that guy doing that.
I mean, set up hard boundaries on that downwind side, too. That'll help you out. Like, if you could set, you know, within 40 yards or 60 yards or whatever of a field edge or a lake or a pond or whatever, that could help you quite a bit, or a big creek or river system as well. Those are things that can help you keep the deer from going downwind of you.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's a great idea. Set up on if you have the spot, set up on a field edge. If the buck goes downwind, you got a shot.
Yeah.
You know, you shoot him in the field.
That's right.
It's cool.
Field bucks.
Drive me nuts.
Do you guys call during the pre-rut or not?
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean – yeah, for sure. I mean, same thing. Like, probably not a lot of blind
call.
What is pre-rut?
We've been doing rut fresh since September 4th, man. It's
pre-rut.
Rut, baby.
July, man. Let's go. I mean, come on. Let's start doing it.
Yeah.
6 months of rut fresh, man.
There's probably some science to that I'm not real familiar with. But if I see a deer about October 1 on, I think you could throw about near anything you want to at him and have a chance.
I mean, I watched a deer in September, and you did too. We watched bucks get very kind of annoyed with each other in the same area. And I also heard sparring on September 28th
mm-hmm.
or 7th.
How to know when you've called too much or too little?
When there's a white flag running off.
mm-hmm.
I mean, if you're calling too little, I don't know that there's a way to know that you're calling too little outside of maybe – like, the deer are as fired up as they ever have been, and you can hear them grunting around you, or you see three fights in one day, you know what I mean? Then mm-hmm. maybe you could realize you're calling too little.
A better way for me to show you calling too much, and I've done it, and it haunts me. In the year of our Lord 2013, a giant Texas public land buck was headed towards me, and I grunted at him. And he stopped. And pretty much, if you have a deer headed to you, stop calling, I think is my answer.
We don't always have deer coming to us, but when we do, we call at them.
Does face paint really help?
It can.
I think so.
I don't use it very often.
I can't grow a beard, so, I mean, it would be good for me, but I use a face mask instead.
Yeah, usually. I think on the ground it would be a much bigger concern than in the tree.
Oh, yeah, for sure. And then also, dude, I think people just don't understand what movement does or does not do for you in the mm-hmm. in the whitetail woods. That's what they're designed to pick up is movement.
Yeah.
It's the same reason why when it was blowing 20 miles per hour last night, nothing wanted to move until 20 minutes before shooting light was over.
Wear a hat when you're hunting whitetails, especially because I'm going to do this to the camera, okay? Like, you can see my face right here. I can still see you, and I have a lot more shadow on my face, and I do that to deer all the time. Just, you know, look down through your
head.
I also
close my eyes when they're looking at me real close.
You got that doe giving you
the pop. Dude, I did it the other day, man, in that hay bale blind. It's like it was looking right in there, and I was just like.
How important is scent control products?
1 out of 10. Not a 0, but a 1.
I don't know. It depends on.
What you're doing.
What you're doing, yeah. I mean, if you're hunting a hay bale blind every day for the whole month of September, I think it would be – I mean, even if it's just getting them used to that smell as opposed to your smell or whatever, and that way when they smell that smell, they know they feel comfortable or something. I think there's some things that it could – you could think about there. But if you're hunting private land, man, I think more important would be ground scent and the direction in which your scent is cast.
It's an interesting point because scent control is a broad spectrum. If you're talking about stuff, that's one thing. But a pair of rubber boots can be considered scent control, and that's huge.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
What is your full First Light whitetail system for cold weather?
This is a plant for sure. Nobody actually asked this, did they?
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. I don't even know what it's all called.
I don't get to wear cold weather stuff very often.
I know.
we're the Trace guys. So
apparently.
Yeah, got on my Trace pants right now.
Yeah.
It changes a little bit, too. There's going to be some new stuff coming out pretty soon. It's going to be pretty cool. But right now, if it's cold, I'm probably wearing a merino bottom with a Catalyst Foundry pant on top. And I'm going to bring a set of bibs in my pack. And then on top, I'm going to wear a wick or something else, maybe even a t-shirt as a base layer. And then I'm going to put a, is that the kiln? Is it the hot one? Furnace. Furnace is legit. Put a furnace on over that. And then I'm going to have a source jacket. And then on top of that, I'm going to put, what's that big one called? I don't remember.
Solitude.
Yeah.
The Sanctuary stuff is their super warm stuff. Mm-hmm. And personally, I run a little bit cold these days. And they got bibs and jacket for that stuff that's, you know, like kind of below 20 is what they say it's for. And so bibs for me, I'm going to have multiple layers so that I can take stuff off and not just – like people are like, oh, you'll melt in that jacket. And it's like, well, not at first. Maybe at 9 o'clock, but then that's why you have, you know, hoodies on and merinos and source jacket and stuff like that. So I usually will layer. The source is really good for layering because it is a puffy and it doesn't have a hood. So I like things that don't have hoods. I pretty much take the hoods off of all of my stuff except for rain gear. And then I have those little Talus fingerless gloves.
Good call.
Those are pretty handy because I usually use my pockets for hand warmth overall. But then you still have the dexterity and ability to grip sticks and ropes and stuff like that as you're setting up.
You can do
up.
A grip and grin with them things.
You sure can.
I will add that this isn't in the whitetail line, but one of the most cost-efficient pieces at First Light and the lightest for how warm it is the Brooks down jacket. That thing is bad.
Yeah. I like that. That's one of my mid layers. It goes with me all the time. Yeah. And it like packs down super small.
So small. Now the problem with the Brooks is that it's not waterproof or resistant or anything, and that's how down is. So you have to keep that in mind.
It's not the quietest either.
Yeah. But it's real, you know what I like about it? Real easy to layer because it's kind of slick, so it just right into stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Would you take a straight down shot out of a saddle?
Tyler?
Mm-hmm. I mean, I pretty much did that Nebraska buck I was talking about. It was 3 yards. I had to really just make sure you bend at the waist, not at the shoulders, right? Keep the T as much as you can. So you've got
a T high, baby.
That's right. Dude, we ain't need none of that TRT up in here.
How to tell if a track is fresh or not?
Oh, this is a good question.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to depend on your conditions. If it's dry, you look for dust because dust will blow away. So you want to see little particles of dust that are on a gradient, you know, like little small ones that kind of go bigger and bigger, bigger up to the edge of the track. You're going to look for other stuff in the track. So like if there is a pine needle or anything like that, you know, it's probably an hour old or something. You know, this is kind of arbitrary. So like just all little indicators like that. I'll also like to think about what's going on in the grand scheme of things, where, like, I did this elk hunting a lot lately. Elk were kind of doing one thing in the morning and one thing in the evening. Well, I'd see some tracks that looked pretty fresh, but they were going the wrong way. So, like, well, that's from this morning. That's not this evening. So that's another way to tell. What about the wetter stuff? You got any thoughts on that?
I use my boot a lot to see, like, what kind of track is my boot leaving? Is it – and what does it look like after I step there? I mean – I weigh pretty similar to what a mature buck is. I'm a mature buck myself.
A swole neck.
So,
yep.
You know, I usually, obviously, my foot is wider and bigger, right? And so it's not going to press as deep down. So that, I just keep that in mind. Just bear that in mind as you look at it. But it gives me some thoughts.
Mm-hmm. Tips and tricks on packing camera gear, archery gear for a day hunt in one bag.
Well, those transfer packs that we have are really big.
Mm-hmm.
As well, I shouldn't say that. Volumetrically, they hold a lot. They're not super huge. They're not too big, but they're built like a square. They don't narrow down at the top like a lot of backpacks do. So you can fit a lot of stuff in there. You're probably the best guy to answer
this. That's what I was going
to say. Yeah, the transfer pack, what I like about it is the side zip. You know what I'm talking about on the front, the side zippers that you can expand the pack if you need to fit more stuff in it or zip them up, and it makes it a little more compact.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think you need to also think about the way you pack the bag. So don't put your heavy layer jacket on the top because you're not going to wear that till later once you get set up, right, if you're going to hang and hunt. So don't put your camera at the bottom of the bag if you're going to video, because you can't video yourself with all the stuff on top without having to take everything out, right? So think about the way you pack your bag. You know, your saddle needs to go at the top of your bag so that once, if you pack it in, so that once you get to the tree, you can put it on and then go up instead of putting, you know, stuff, yeah, pulling stuff out and whatever. So just think about the way you pack, I guess, more than anything, and use clothes to protect that camera gear a little bit.
Preferred frame pack for solo packing out a deer.
Well, we used the Exos recently. I don't know if I have a preference. Those are packs we have. I mean,
we've packed out of the transfer pack before.
We have. It's not a frame pack, though.
It's not fun. I mean, but we also did a mile pack in it. So not everybody's going to be packing that.
I don't know. Greg has a Mystery Ranch that works great. It's frame pack. I have a Stone Glacier, works good. I don't know if there's, like, those Kafaros, I'm not sure, bad at the bone.
Yeah, I don't have a ton of experience with anything. I mean, the Exos are nice.
I do like one thing about the Exos, and I think that there's some – I don't know which brands have them. So let's just talk about a type of pack. I like the dump pack like that. It has the roll top.
Yeah.
So, like, on an elk, I like the ones that squeeze stuff together and you strap it down because you're usually toting a quarter. But a dude can haul out a whole whitetail deer, like, fairly easy. Right? Not easy, but, like, it's pretty doable. So, like, being able to put a bunch – yeah, well, we could have hauled out two in South Texas last year.
Yeah. Last night I couldn't have held that deer out.
No, it'd been pretty tough. wait, last night?
I mean
– oh.
I was hoping you'd keep talking.
having the dump-style pack just allows you to just keep shoving meat in there so you can put a bunch of different quarters and cuts and stuff. Mm-hmm. So that might be a point there.
Yep.
If you're solo hunting, do you bring a frame pack to the tree for packing out the deer?
I mean, unless I'm using it as my whitetail backpack all year, I don't. I usually go out, but it just depends, man. If that's what you want to do all year and that's your pack and it works for you, then so be it. But
we hardly – and you might do something.
I'm taking all my stuff back to the truck and then coming back in.
You might do this a little bit this year, but like we hardly ever are true solo hunting anymore.
Yeah, it's true.
We always different. I mean, we might hunt by ourselves, but there's usually a dude around. And not to go all philosophical on you and be Socrates over here or anything, but like if you find yourself solo hunting a lot and don't have someone to come help you, you might do some self-evaluation as to why you don't have the person to come help you. Mm-hmm. It's kind of sombering, but like it might be good to have a buddy. You don't have to, like, hunt together, but it might be good to have a buddy you know you can rely on to come help you pack out a deer.
Mm-hmm.
Last question. If you could have one piece from First Light for deer hunting, what would it be?
One Piece. Isn't that, like, a popular anime? Yeah. That's what
I don't – you're the one.
It just got Netflix adapted.
You can ask your boy Jason about that.
Yeah, for sure I'm going to. I haven't watched it, but I think it's about gold mining or something. I don't really know. I'm a Dragon Ball Z guy. What was the question? One piece of First
Source
Light.
Jacket. I'm calling it.
All right. Dadgummit. One piece of First Light, right?
Mm-hmm.
Source Jacket. Explain why.
Man.
Please.
I don't know what Mark, how much credit he's going to get in this. But
no, none.
Okay, good. Perfect. The Source Jacket is the perfect combination, at least so far, the best combination of insulation, lightweight, quiet, comfortable interior. And I really, me and KC have really, the Spectre pattern has grown on us a lot.
Oh, man.
At first, we were like, I don't know. And then the more we hunt in it, the more we're like, man, it really does blend into – that's. I mean, this sounds like a, like we're just making it up, but it really does blend into a lot of different habitats. It's weird because it is kind of a little bit of a darker pattern, but I mean, even in Kansas, it looks good a lot of times.
There's a lot of light breakup in there.
Yeah, yeah.
The only – and this is – I'm going to say something bad about First Light, right?
Oh, man.
The only place it doesn't work is out there in the antelope country.
Yeah.
It's like light-colored grass.
So, Typha.
Yeah, everything else for Inspector, anywhere else in the country. I mean, elk hunting, whatever, don't matter. It is good.
And the Source Jacket, I don't know, it's just it looks good too. Like, it makes you feel like you can just wear it around the house because it's like a – if you ever watch any of the Duck Dynasty stuff or Duck Commander stuff, they always just have camo on all the time, right? It's not like – something they put on and then the rest of the time they're wearing slacks and stuff, you know, like they are in camo shirts all the time. And so that Source Jacket, you know, if you're wearing a different thing like the Brooks or something, you would look like potentially like a guy who likes to camp and hike, which I ain't. I mean, I like camping a little bit, but I usually try to have some sort of goal when I'm hiking and it involves chasing some critter. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So this just, it makes it to me, from as a guy from just East Texas, it makes me feel like I could wear that jacket around town in January and just everybody knows, like, oh, that dude's a hunter, you know, and he just fits in with me or whatever, you know. That's not the reason I would buy the jacket. The reason is because of all the other things I said.
Yeah. And it's on sale right now,
is
by
it?
The way, for Whitetail Week. So that's a good reason to buy it as well. It's pretty good value. So that would probably be a good pick. So I'm going to go with the bottom, and I'm going to say the Catalyst Foundry pant is, if it is colder than 60 degrees, that is the pant I'm wearing. I love it. It zips from hip to ankle. So you talk about air out when you need to. It is awesome. And they're tough. It's more like a Carhartt than it is like a technical mountain hunting piece. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Like, It's legit. You can like knee down on some stickers and it doesn't get you. I love it.
So I need to get me some. I think I have some.
I gave you a pair.
Yeah. I just haven't worn them yet.
Yeah. And I would get those. By the way, I would get those in Dark Earth. Isn't that the color?
No.
Dry Earth.
Dry Earth. That's right. Yeah. I'd get those in Dry Earth if I was you.
Yep.
Yep.
Cool. Well, we appreciate you guys asking all these questions.
Yeah.
It's really. We appreciate when you ask questions and when it gives us something to talk about. It gives us a chance to answer. And, you know, we enjoy trying to help people. That's something that we do like doing. So if you do have questions, you can send any of those to our DMs on Instagram, Facebook. We've got an email address you can find us at as well. You can even hit Eric up on Instagram, and he'll put those in a list for us. Don't forget, Whitetail Bums video is out. So go check that out. Also, the Arkansas Buck Truck video with Clay Newcomb. Those two are videos that you should watch. The Buck Truck video is on Meat Eater's YouTube channel, not ours, just so you know. Also, Rut Fresh is going on. You can hear us every week over on the Wired to Hunt feed. Make sure you're subscribed over there, but don't listen to that guy named Mark.
Some of y'all were asking about merch and stuff, and right now, honestly, the best way you can support us is to go to the what's it called? The description of this podcast down below, you'll see a link that says Whitetail Wink. Whitetail. Whitetail Week. Click that and use that to navigate all these places we're telling you because that's going to show your support for what we do. If you go through that, it shows that you are accessing through the element, and we would appreciate that. Mm-hmm. And while you're at it, it's Whitetail Week. Let's get excited. There's deer hitting the ground all over the place.
Man, like proximity.
It's close to here. And let's get pumped about this thing, guys. Remember, this is fun. That's why we do it. Bring you some meat home, have a story to tell, and remember, this is your element.
Live in it.
Hey, we're going to take a little break here and talk about Interstate batteries. Now, if you're like me, enjoying the great outdoors, you need gear that is as reliable as it gets. That's why I power my adventures with Interstate batteries. I use Interstate batteries in my boats. I use Interstate batteries in my camper. Great for your truck, too. From Alaska to Montana, they're outrageously dependable. Battery is essential. With over 150,000 dealer locations, finding one is easy. For all your vehicles, land or sea, choose Interstate. Head to interstatebatteries.com and find your power today. You ever get that feeling? The walls closing in, the concrete jungle suffocating you? You crave some wide open spaces, the chance to connect with nature, maybe in a spot all your own. Well, head over to land.com. They've got ranches, forests, mountains, streams, you name it. Search by acreage. You can search by location. You can search by the kind of hunting and fishing you're dreaming of. Land.com. It is where the adventure begins.